Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Tzadik Gimel Amud Bet, right after the Mishnah. We read the Mishnah yesterday, and then we had the qualifying statement of Rav Katina. Ta'ani Rav Katina, Rova Kitniot de Sa'ah Ve'afruri Tulo. When the Mishnah says that the buyer accepts within the quantity or volume that he buys, that 1/24th of it may not be exactly what he bought, that's only true if it's replaced with another product. Another produce. But if it is dirt, if it is stones that are in there, he doesn't accept that. So the idea being that since they work in the same fields with other items, including legumes and other things that they plant in the interim or that they store in the same place, so there's a likelihood that when they put it in the silo, the threshing floor from the field, something else will get mixed in with it. Up to a 24th is considered acceptable, just as an aside. A lot of the problem of kidney oat really developed from this, which was that many of the kidney oat were processed in the same areas as wheat, and therefore there was a high likelihood that wheat got mixed up in the kidney oat, especially with rice, and that's why even some Moroccans, who generally don't have the yeast of kidney oat, won't eat rice, because of a story with the Ben Ishkai that they found wheat kernels inside of the rice. That's exactly what's being described over here. We have other produce that is coming up inside of the produce that you're buying. That's fine. Rav Katina says up to 1/24th. Dirt, rocks, stones, that's not acceptable at all. Mar says, V'amar Rabba Barchia K'tovsa Mishmed Rabba Borer Tzror Migarno Shokhaveiro. If someone has a threshing area where they have piled up all the wheat, they've worked the wheat, and now they have a pile of wheat kernels, and there are stones and other things mixed in with the wheat kernels because the way that they did their threshing, they're out in the field. They took a flat area in the field, and then they threshed out there. So it was high likelihood that things from the field itself, stones, rocks, got mixed in with the wheat kernels. So his friend comes along and sees that there's a stone in there, a little pebble in there, and he pulls it out. Notein lo demei chitim. He's now got to pay him the value of the chitim that he caused him to lose. When you think about this, if he was to take this and sell it in the market, it would be acceptable to have stones mixed in with it because that's what people expect. So that's part of the weight of the volume that he's going to sell. This rock counts towards that volume. It's an acceptable part of the wheat kernels that he has there. The guy who pulled it out now thought he was doing him a favor. Meantime, cost him money. Because now he was going to get paid for a rock, the price of wheat. And instead now, he loses out that volume from the rock. So what do you want him to do? Put it back in? So that, the Rashbam says, is an ovel. If it gets mixed up by mistake, then it's acceptable. Then there's mechila. To intentionally mix in other items in order to have it be weighted, that is unacceptable. That's under the rubric of lotasu ovel. And therefore, neither can the owner nor the person who took it out put the stone back. But now he has to compensate him for the fact that he caused him a loss by taking out the volume or the weight of this stone that was in there. The reason that he is chayav over here, the Rivam in the Balei HaTosafot suggests that the reason you are chayav over here is based on the position of Rabbi Shimon, which is davar ha-gorim le-mamon ki-mamon dami. Something that causes monetary value or exchange or loss has the same din as having inherent monetary value. Over here, the stone itself has no inherent monetary value. But it does cause monetary value because if it's put into the package and weighed, it would give you a monetary return of wheat. And therefore, it's classified as davar ha-gorem le-mamon, ke-mamon dami. The Ri, on the other hand, disagrees with that and says, da'ati afilu ki-rabbonon. He thinks it even follows the position of the Rabbonon. It's as if he stole the chitim straight out. Because here he sells the stones that are mixed in there like wheat. It's not a gorem de mamon. In truth, now the stones take on an inherent monetary value because they go into the package that's going to be weighed for the chitim. It's not just a gorem de mamon, it is mamon itself. And he says that's distinct from the case where somebody burns someone else's shtar. And we say over there, well, that's a davar ha-gorem the mamon. Well, you burn the shtar, you didn't burn the inherent value of the loan or whatever was outstanding. You just burned paper. Happens to be on that paper was documented the fact that this person owed money or whatever the transaction was. So you caused a loss through means of grama, But the niyar itself never had inherent value to it. On the other hand here, the stones and the rocks that are in there will be treated as if they have inherent value of chitin, because that's the way they will be sold. That's the way they'll be transacted with. And because of that, the Ri thinks that the damage over here is a direct form of damage. And that's what the Rashbam says over here. He says that it is a direct form of damage. And that is why you can't put the rock or stone back in. Because of, number one, we said before, Loto Suavel. And number two is that the buyer is not the mochel. And in that way, you've created or damaged him biyadayim. And because he did damage biyadayim, you're chayav. And then he brings v'inami. The other possibility is, lo chashibile hezek gamur. It isn't real hezek. And he quotes the same reasoning as the Rivam, his, very possibly his brother, Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Meir. And the Rashbam is Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Meir. They're both grandsons of Rashi through his daughter. Their father, Rabbi Meinu Meir, was the son-in-law of Rashi. So here these brothers seemingly have the same conceptual idea that there's a lack in inherent value in the pebble or the stone that's found in the wheat. So then, how can you be mechayev? The Rivam said, oh, it's davar goreim lemamon. Here the Rashbam pulls out another reason, which is dine de garmi. Dine de garmi is when you are the cause of something, then you are chayav. How do we distinguish that from grama ben ezikin? Grama ben ezikin is patur. Garmi, the way that we paskin ben ezikin, is chayav. So how do we know whether it's grama, where it's cause, and you're patur? Or how do we know if it's garmi, where it's more directed cause, and you are chayav? So when we learned the sugi in Baba Kama, the Rishonim come up with all sorts of distinctions. Here the Rashbam brings us one of those distinctions that he thinks defines the difference between grama and garmi, which is when you have hezek she'enu nikar. If it's hezek nikar, then you're doing something biyadayim. You're going to be chayav biyishirut. Over here, it's a hezek she'enu nikar. You can't see the hezek that he did, because all he did was take out a stone or a pebble. How do you see the hezek that he did? So it's hezek she'enu nikar, but it's called garmi because he did it biyadayim. The difference between garmi and grama is whether you did it biyadayim or not. If you did it directly, it was a direct outcome of your action, that's called garmi and your chayav. If it was an indirect result of your action, then it's called groma and you are patur. Well, if you did it directly with your dying, you should be chayav because it's nezek gamur. The case here is, the problem is that it's hezek she'enu nikar. The hezek's not apparent or obvious, and therefore you would be patur because of nezek itself, but you're chayav because of garmi. So those are the three different ways to approach why the individual is chayav when he pulls out the pebble, either because of the ravara gorim the mamon, because of garmi, or because you classify it as being real nezek, active real nezek over here. Now the Gemara answers, okay, kitnit rova. When it comes to kitnit, you can have up to a rova kav, up to 1/24. Afrufit pachot mi rova. When it comes to dirt, pebble, stones that are mixed in, it has to be less than 1/24. So that the way that they deal with Rabbi Barchia's statement is that when you take out a tzror, you are chayav, is because there is a amount that is valid to keep in there and that you would get value for, but that doesn't mean it has the same structure as other produce. So now what we're saying is that Rabbi Katina's differentiation is that by other produce, you can have up to rova kav, which is up to 1/24 of the mix. When it comes to dirt, stones, and that, you can only have up to 1/24. You can't have 1/24. It's a lower threshold. And that was the distinction that Rav Katina was making. Mar says, vafrurit rova lo. Is it really true when it comes to the dirt and the stones and pebbles that you can't get up to rova kav and still be okay? Vatanya, don't we have a brayta? Mocher peirot l'chaveiro. Person who sells fruits to his friend, produce to his friends, chitin. If it is wheat, mikabel alav rova kitnit lisa'a. He accepts a quarter kav of legumes per sa'a, which seemingly would be supportive of what Rav Katina said before, which is here the only solit that we allow in there is other items like legumes. Si'orim, when it comes to barley, mikabel alav rova nishovet lisa'a. You accept, again, a quarter kav worth of nishovet. Nishovet comes from nashvaha ruach, which is the way that you do zoreh, how you do the winnowing. The winnowing is you throw the wheat up, and then the wind comes and grabs it. That nishiva, that blowing of the wind, takes away the chaff, takes away the straw, And that is what the nishovet is. You accept a mix within the barley of that chaff and of that straw up to 1/24 of the mix. Adashim, when it comes to lentils, mikabel alav rova afurit lisa'ah. There you accept 1/24 of the mix will have dirt, stones, pebbles mixed in with it. My love. So now from this brayta, it seems like dirt is a qualified material to be in there, just like these other items. And you would accept up to 1/24 of it being in the mix. So the Gemara says, what would you assume here? Huadin l'chitim l'se'orim. That not only is that true by lentils, it's also true by wheat and barley. So why did it mention adashim? Why did it specifically attach dirt to adashim and not to chitim and se'orim? Where it says, shani adashim, dimi aker akre luhu. Because the way they are harvested is different than wheat and barley. Wheat and barley is cut and then brought in and processed. Lentils are uprooted from the ground. Anything you uproot from the ground is always going to have dirt associated with it. So the reason that it mentions it specifically by adashim is because it's more common to be found by adashim. So all the brayta is doing is telling you the most common item to be found with this. So with chitim, the most common item is legumes. By se'orim, it's the nishovet. And over here by adashim, it is the dirt, pebbles, and stones. Where it says, Ella taima do adashim di me'akri akri luhu. So now you're telling me that adashim, it's because they're uprooted, it has the dirt in him. Aval chitim isari lo. So then the opposite conclusion would be that chitim and sarim don't have it. So what we thought until now was that afarit up to a rova kav is valid. You saw that from the brayta. The brayta says it's fine. When it says, no, don't extrapolate from the brayta where it says it by lentils to the other items, because lentils are unique. They're unique in the fact that they're uprooted rather than cut. When it says, well, once you do that, you say they're uprooted and not cut, that means chite and sa'are, you don't accept dirt. You shouldn't have the right to put it in, at least rova kav. We don't know what the threshold is, but you can't have the threshold of rova kav. Tifshot mina. From then you should conclude just the opposite. Chita v'sa'are dafurit lo mikabel. That you won't accept it at all. By chita and sa'are, dirt is not acceptable. It would be supportive of what Rick Katina said. We originally brought the brayta to undermine his position. Now it sounds like the brayta is supportive of his position because we are saying it's uniquely associated with lentils and not with chita and sa'are. Where it says, lo'olam chita v'sa'are mikabel afrurit. No, the truth is, even by chite visare, he accepts that amount of dirt in it. Adashim mitzrichale. And he needed to say it specifically by lentils. Now, the truth is, if it's true by chite and sa'are, then they should have written it by chite and sa'are, and you would have known adashim as an automatic extrapolation. If by chite visare we give you the right to have the dirt in, certainly, or koshikane by lentils. The Gemara says, no, that's exactly the problem. Had we only written it by chite and sa'are, we would have said over there, sakadat chamina kevin demakri akluhu, that over there, that's where we say that rova kav is the threshold. Aval, but when it comes to adashim, it's trichle, we would have thought even more, that you could have even more than that. Sakadat chamina kevin demakri akluhu, you'll tell me rova nami lekabel. Since it's something that is pulled out of the dirt, maybe you should get even more than a rova kav, more than 1/24 over there. Kamash Valoa, know that that is a cap. So we can't prove it in either direction. From the Brayta, you could read the Brayta as being supportive of Rav Katina, but you could also read the Brayta as not being supportive of Rav Katina. It's not definitive that the Brayta is against or for that position of Rav Katina, because you could explain Adashim as being a unique product, not Chitei V'Sa'are, and that would be supportive of him, but you could also explain that adashim, and the same is true by chitei v'sa'are, the reason it wrote it by adashim is to limit it to 1/24 and say no, that you don't get more than 1/24 over here. Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna says, im bala nafot menapeh et kulo. If you come to sift it, then you have to sift the entire amount. The way that the Rashbam says over here is, the buyer is suspicious of the seller that he has more than 1/24 mixed in there. So he demands that he sift the product. What Rav Huna says is, once you begin to sift the product, you can't just sift out the excess amount above the 1/24. You have to now sift the entire product and get rid of any refuse, any alternate produce that's in there. You have to rid yourself of everything. That's the way the Rishbam learns it. Others learn it. It's a case where we know for certain there's more than 1/24 in there. The way the Rishbam says it is that he's calling the bluff of the seller and saying, I think you are cheating and there's more than that in there. I want you to sift it through. On the other hand, other Rishonim believe it's a case where he already knows there's one more than 1/24 of there, and he's demanding that he sift it out. So now, the Ravuna's Chiddush is that you can't just get it below the threshold of 1/24. You now have to eliminate it completely. So it's a much greater loss to the seller. Had the seller had 1/24 in there, he could have simply left it and it would have been fine. Now that he has more than 1/24, not only does he have to clear up the excess above 1/24, he now has to clear out that whole 1/24. So he's going to lose money over here. So Amri lo dina, v'amalei knosa. Some say it's mi'ikar adin, that he's chayav to clear the whole thing out. Some say it's a matter of penalty or fine. Amri lo dina, those that say that it is mi'ikar adin, mandu yoiv zuze, apere shapir yahoiv. A person who pays money to buy produce, he plans on buying produce. That's what he wants. Verova lo torach inish. When it comes to a rova, people will not make the effort. Yoter mi rova, torach inish. More than rova kav, people will make the effort. We came into torach, torach bekule. But once they make the effort, they're going to engage and do the whole thing. So the way that the Rashbam reads it over here is that the buyer wants to take out this stuff. In the end, he really would love to have it out of there because he's in the end paying for stuff that he doesn't want. Even maybe even a premium price for dirt, or he's paying a premium price for other produce that he has no interest in. So for sure, he wants it out. But there is a cost-benefit analysis that he does. The cost or the effort undertaken to sift it out is not worth the value that he will save by having that 1/24 taken out. So what the Rishbam says is just a economic decision. The reason a person is mochel up to 1/24 is because there's no return. You sift the item and you get out that 1/24, the cost it will be for you to undertake the sifting of it, if you had to pay someone or your time, if you had to do it, will not give you enough of a return in the savings on the price of the produce. Now, the Rishbam points out that even if an individual doesn't want to forgive or be mochel on that amount that is there, and he says, even though it's less than 1/24, I want it sifted, I want it cleared out, we say, betela dato et zokol adam. We say that he is an outlier, and because the normal way that people behave is in this manner, therefore we disregard what he's saying, and we disregard his demand, and the seller does not have to sift it for him, or does not have to take it out for him, and if he wants it, he's got to pay for it. He doesn't have a right to say, I'm not mochel, because that's the normal way that people conduct themselves, and therefore we see him as being an exception to the rule and not somebody who undermines the rule. As soon as you get up above a rov akav, that dynamic changes. And now the benefit exceeds the cost, and you're going to sift. Once you sift already, it pays to sift the whole thing and not just to get out that excess amount. Once you already have to do the sifting, you may as well do the whole lot. So that's what it means, mi'ikar adin. Once he's already compelled to sift, he's got to sift the whole thing because the buyer no longer thinks that it is a uneconomic effort or an endeavor to sift it out. And for that reason, now he wants totally clean stuff. He doesn't want you just to get it under 1/24. That's the way the Rashbam learns it. Others see it from the other perspective, from the mocher's perspective. It's not worth undertaking the sifting. Here, he's saying it's from the buyer's perspective, but from the mocher's perspective, again, if he sifts over here, the amount that he's going to take out versus whether people will buy it is not great. Once you get over that excess of 1/24, then buyers are going to be reluctant to take it, and then it starts to pay for him to sift it through. Or the other way to formulate it is to say that the Chachamim did not compel the seller to deal with it. Up to that point, it's too much for the seller to deal with. It's going to eat into his margins. It's not a reasonable thing to ask of him. Beyond that threshold, then it is reasonable to ask him to take care of it and to remove it from the item. Either way, no matter which way you look at it, the idea is that there is an economic decision being made here, and that's what it means. It's an ikar adin. Once you start sifting, you got to sift the whole thing. The other possibility is v'amri la knoso. Some say that it's a fine or a penalty. Rova shchiach, that it is normal to have 1/24 in the mixture. Yoter lo shchiach, to have more than 1/24 is unusual or not expected. V'ihu da'ariv. Therefore, we assume that what happened here is not that it was naturally mixed in there, but the owner or the seller of here started to mix it in order to cheat the buyers. So therefore, came in da'ariv, since he now mixed it in, kansur rabbanan bikulei. Therefore, the rabbanan penalized him not only to take out the excess he put in, but to penalize him to take out the whole amount. Now, the Rashbam over here, it's really based on the Gemara in the second half of today's daf, says that that is the nafkamina between the two different reasons. There are those that believe that there is no real nafkamina between the two reasons. In both cases, he's going to have to do it and take it out. The only real difference will be the technical difference between a knas and a monetary payment. So, for instance, modeh b'knas is patur. So over here, if it was a knas, he'd be patur. If it's me'ikar adin, he would not be patur. But that's the technical difference between knas and a monetary obligation, but there's no real difference between the reasons. On the other hand, the Rashbam over here believes that there is a fundamental difference between the reasons, and that is if you know for sure he didn't mix it in intentionally. If he wasn't the cause of the mixture, it was the natural mixture here, was above 1/24. In that case, the Rashbam says, according to one who says Mikar Adin, it still pays economically to sift it, and therefore he'll demand that he sifts it. According to the Mandamar that says it's a Knas, now there's no reason for the Knas. The whole Knas is because we were afraid that he was mixing it intentionally. Over here, we know for certain he didn't mix it intentionally. Therefore, the Rashbam says, that's enough kamina between them. In that case, he will not have to sift it out, even if it's more than Rova Akav, if we know for sure that he didn't mix it in. So that's what the Rashbam sees as being the nafkamina between them. Again, others see that there is no nafkamina except for the technical differences between monetary obligations and fines. Meitave. So now the Gemara is going to spend time challenging these different positions. Kol sa'a sheish ba rova mimin acher ima eit. Any sa'ah that has within it a rova akav, more than 1/24 of problematic produce in there, yima eit, you reduce it. So now this goes against Rav Huna's position. Now there's a machloket here between the Rashbam and the Balei HaTosafot as to whether it's a question on the one who says kenas, which is the view of the Balei HaTosafot, or whether it's a question on the person who says that it's me'ikar adin. And that's the question. There is a third opinion, which is, this is just a general question, generically on Rav Huna. It has nothing to do with whether you think it's a din or a knas. And that is because Rav Huna says, once you start taking it out, you gotta take it all out. Right. Over here, you have a brighter that's saying you don't have to take it all out. You only have to be yima'et. You only have to reduce it back down to the lower level. So according to one who says it's just a generic question, we understand it. The other views that it's either a question on the din or the knas, we'll explain now. Savrua. We thought to say, we assumed, so you know already what the answer is going to be, is that that assumption is incorrect. But Savrua, the ruba de kilayim, ki yoter mi ruba de hocha. That a 1/24 of kilayim is considered to be the same level of problem as more than 1/24 in our case in our Mishnah. I would have thought, personally, that they have the exact same din. What the Gemara is saying is, wait a minute, no. Kilayim is a much more chamur din. It involves an Isur Achila, it involves an Isur Hana'ah, there's an Isur Doraita involved with it. The 1/24 of our Mishnah is an economic question. It might be violations Doraita if a person does it intentionally, if there's too much in there, but it's an economic question. Over here we're dealing with Isur and a serious Isur. So what the Gemara is saying is that by Kilayim, a 1/24 is the equivalent of more than 1/24 in our Mishnah. So now, V'katani, and it says, yima'et. And despite that fact, it says you gotta reduce it. So now the way that the Rashbam learns it, even though, afagav the isur kalayim chamuru, she'en beitin yocholim lefkia isur, even though it's very chamur, and beitin doesn't have a right to undermine the isur that's involved there, nevertheless, we still see that beitin over here says, yima'et. All you have to do is get it below the threshold. And once you go to that threshold, it shows you that that's not a meaningful amount. So since Beit Din can't remove the Isur, and given that they can't remove the Isur, it must be that once you go below the threshold of 1/24, it's as if it doesn't exist, or it's as if it's not a problem of Kilayim. If that's true by Isur, Al-Khad Kama V'Kama, in our case, where Mi'ikar Adin, everybody accepts 1/24, it's only above 1/24, we don't accept it, all you would have to do is yima'et. Just get below the level 1/24, and it would be considered as if it doesn't exist. Because over there, Beit Din can be mafker, hefker, Beit Din, hefker, and they can eliminate ownership over there. So if Beit Din is willing to say that below 1/24 threshold by kilayim is not considered to be an isur d'oraita, even though they don't have the power to eliminate an isur, then certainly in the case of monetary matters, where they do have the power to take something out of your possession and give it to someone else, hefker beit din hefker, then certainly bringing it below the threshold of 1/24 should be enough. That's the way the Rishbam learns it. And from that, he sees it as a question on the one d'amar who says that it's mi'ikar adin. Mi'ikar adin, beit din doesn't have the ability to interfere or intervene in kilayim, yet imait works. Then certainly over here, where beit din does have the ability to interfere, mi'ikar adin, then certainly it should be imait would suffice. So that's the way he sees the question. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot see the question as alishna de kanasa parich. The question is on the one who says that it's a kanas. The tani imait. Below kansina and pachot mirova alto rova. You see over here that even though a rova akav is problematic by kilayim, we don't penalize the guy when he has a rova of kilayim and make him take it away completely. We only make him take it down to a level that is acceptable. So you see no kanas over here. Even though generally people are more makpid to sift through and make sure that they get the cleanest seed possible, yet the case in Kilayim says you just have to reduce it. You don't have to clear it out completely. Over here where it's Achila, where people are not as makpid by Achila to clear out all of the excess or idler items that are there, then certainly you shouldn't have a knas that forces you to remove it entirely. Taking it down to the respectable level should be enough. You shouldn't have to go beyond that. There should be no penalty for it. That's the way that the Balei Tosafot see the question. Although they say that you could explain it like the Rishbam. And that really leads to that third position, which is, maybe it has nothing to do with Knas. And Dina has to do with the Ikar question, do you have to be Ma'at or not? And it's a question on Rav Huna's principle in general. Now what the case is, according to the Rishbam over here, in Kol Sa'a, he says, this situation, this case here, is Tvuash Yeshbo Rova Akav Min Acher. It is grain that has within it a Rova Akav, 1/24 of some other produce item. Yima 8, he must reduce the item, Dololahavi Rova, Vachar Kachi Zireno. And then afterwards he should plant it. B'chein Perish Rabbeinu Chananel. That's what Rabbeinu Chananel says. Inami, the other possibility is Nizre'u Elishalo Nishreshu. He planted it already, but they have yet to root. Adayin Yima 8, then you can reduce it. Aval Im Nishreshu. If they have rooted already, Ein Lehem O Takana. Then you can't fix it anymore. Shkvar Ne'esru B'Hashrasha. Because now they're already a sewer. Once they root in there, it's already a problem of kilayim. And kilayim is not only a sewer b'achila, but it's also a sewer b'hana'a. And that's what you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom. Mishum dechomer kilayim, shiny the iser hana'a. We're talking about kilayim here that is chamor because it has an iser hana'a associated with it. That would assume that we're talking about here kilei hakerem and not kilei zra'im. And that's basically what the Rishbam is saying, bringing from the Rabbeinu Chananel, as well as his own interpretation, that the seeds that we're speaking about here are a problem of kilei hakerem. Given that, you have an iser hana'a once it's rooted, and then you can't get out of the problem. You can only take care of the problem prior to that moment. The Balei Tosafot disagree, because where do you see kilei hakerem over here? All you see is that you have produce or wheat that has something else mixed in with it. Who says those are grape seeds? It might be sorim, it might be legumes. Who says it's kilei hakerem? If it's only kilei zra'im, which is different species that are being planted together, there might be an isur in kilei zra'im to plant them up front or to grow kilei zra'im, but there is no isur hana'a that is associated with them. So that's what the Balei Tosafot say. What is he talking about? Even if they rooted, it wouldn't make a difference because there is no Yisrael now when we're talking about Kilei Zra'im. So he clearly thinks that we're speaking about Kilei Zra'im, and therefore the Balei Tosafot talk about it. He says they already rooted. Yima'it doesn't mean that you take it out of the mixture and you reduce it. It means that it's already planted, and Yima'it, you reduce that which is there. You take down the level of mixture that is growing together, the odd, whatever it is, produce that is mixed in there, that is 1/24, because once it is rooted already, there's an iser not only to plant kilayim, but also to sustain kilayim. And the sustaining of kilayim is the violation over here, and that's why we say yimait. You have to get it down below that threshold so that you're not in violation of sustaining kilayim there. But then it's speaking about kilei zra'im and not kilei akerim, because we're talking about an item that is not asur ba'ana or asur ba'achila once it's rooted. It's simply a problem that once it's rooted and it's growing, then you're growing kilayim. And not only is planting and growing kilayim asur, but the sustaining or allowing the kilayim to remain in your field is also problematic. You need to be okay. You need to uproot it. So you need to get below the threshold, below 1/24, and then you can leave it. So you're not in violation of kilay zira'im. Gemara says, lo. Rova de kilayim kiruva de hocha. Dummy. Gemara says, your assumption that they were different is wrong. Everything's equal. The same rova akav 1/24 that's applicable by kilayim is also applicable by our mishnah. Ihochi amayimait. So then why is the din different by kilayim than it is by us? The answer is, mishum chumra de kilayim. Because of the severity of kilayim. Severity of kilayim demands that even when you're within the threshold of a problem, we want you to be yima'it. We want you to reduce the amount. So again here, the Rishbam and the Rabbeinu Gershom seem to indicate, what does that mean, chumra de kilayim? That there's an isra anah. We're talking about kilei akerem. According to the Baal HaTosafot, we're talking about kilei zra'im. So what is the chumra? Allowing the kilayim to remain in your field is also problematic. You need to be okay. You need to unfruit it. Ema Seifa, what are you going to do with the latter half of that, right? Rabbi Yossi Omer, Yivor. Now, you can't just take it down 1/24th, but rather you have to do Borer. You have to take it all out. In essence, Rabbi Yossi is saying what we saw from Rav Huna. Iyamart Vishloma, if you say, Yoter Mirubatino Fedomi, if you say that a Rova Akav of this Kilayim is equivalent to more than a Rova Akav by us, Bahaka Miflegate, and that's understandable what the machloket is between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi. Tanakama Sabar Lokansina and Hetera Atu Isura. Tanakama says, whatever the Isur is, get it below the threshold of the Isur. Whereas the Heter stuff, don't worry about. Rabbi Yossi Sabar, Kansina. And Rabbi Yossi says, no, once we're gonna penalize you and have forced you to take it below the Rova Akav level, we're gonna penalize you to take it all out. There's a Kanas over here. So then that would be, again, Rabbi Yossi would be supportive of the position in Rav Huna that says that it is a kenas. Eliyamart kerova dami. But if you say they are equal, that means that both our Mishnah and the case in the Braita, 1/24th is the threshold. And by us, 1/24th, you don't have to do anything. And yet by the Kilayim, the 1/24th, you have to reduce it. Amayivor. Then that doesn't make so much sense, according to Rabbi Yossi, that you have to be Boreret HaKol. Because the Ikar Adin, you would have to do nothing for Kilayim. Why do we force you to take it below a 24th? It's because of Chumrah de Kilayim. This is a Chumrah midrabanan that we force you to take it below. So now Rabbi Yossi is going to come along and on top of that Chumrah midrabanan, say not only do you have to take it below the 1/24th level, you have to take it out completely. That's a Gzeirah l'Gzeirah. That's a Chumrah al Gabe Chumrah. And then it doesn't make any sense where Rabbi Yossi would make such a statement. It says, no, hatamayinu taima de Rabbi Yossi. The moshum de mechse kimikayim kilayim. Because it looks like he's intentionally keeping kilayim. So now this has to do with when someone engages with isur. If you have isur that is there, let us say that if it's too small an amount, where it's insignificant, if you go ahead and plant it, we don't assume that you're really planting kilayim, and we don't assume that you are sustaining kilayim when it's found in the ground. On the other hand, if we tell you to take out the isur, and you go ahead and take out a portion of the Isur, but leave the remaining Isur in, then in essence what you've done is actively left the Isur in and made it as if you are okay or fine with the Isur being there. For the Baal HaTosafot means that it's already planted in the ground, and all you did was take down the excess amount that gets you below 1/24th of the mixture. That means the remainder of the mixture that's planted there, you're A-okay with. You're going to leave it there because you only took out the pieces that needed to get you there. The implicit conclusion from your action is that the remainder that's there, you're totally fine with. And it looks should be like you're being Mikayim Kilayim. So that's the way the Baal HaTosafot would see it. The Rashbam, who thinks that we're talking about real Kilei HaKerem over here, there's an Isur to be Mikayim Kilayim. There's an Isur to not only actively grow Kilei HaKerem, but even to sustain Kilei HaKerem is also a sur. And that would be the same thing over here. Because if you are now separating out a portion of the Isur and leaving the remainder of the Isur in there, then in one way, even though you're not actively doing it, but in your passive action, you're basically saying that this is fine. And then you're sustaining Kilayim, and if you're sustaining Kilayim, it's problematic. So even though fundamentally there's no Isur Kilayim because it's below the threshold, nevertheless, Mechzeh, it doesn't look good. It looks like you are implicitly allowing it to grow or leaving this in intentionally for it to grow. Had you not engaged in it at all and planted it, it would have grown by itself. You would have nothing to do with it. But now that you sifted a portion of it out and left the other portion there, that makes it look as if the portion that you left behind, you intentionally left there to be grown as a mixture. So that's why we make the differentiation. So again, the Havamina was that Kilayim, we know for sure, is more chamor than our Mishnah. So now, how does that manifest itself? The Gemara assumed up front that it manifests itself in the fact that by us, when you're above 1/24th, we tell you you gotta clear it out, that's Rav Huna. For the Kilayim, we said, well, 1/24th exactly, you gotta get it below that threshold. And that was the question of the Gemara. That sounds like it's against Rav Huna, because over here we allow you just to take it below the threshold. By us, we make you clear it out. That's a problem. Why is that true? The Gemara says, you got it wrong. The comparison is completely wrong. Yes, Kilayim is more chamor, but nevertheless, we have the same din as our Mishnah. 1/24th is the threshold, period. And even though Kilayim is more chamor, that doesn't change the threshold. What it does change is the requirement. By us, 1/24th, we waive it and say, don't worry about it. By Kilayim, we say 1/24th, you got to take it below 1/24th. The Gemara says, why do you got to take it below 1/24th? That's the chumrah of Kilayim. Once you do that, we understand the Tanakhama's position, Rabbi Yossi's position becomes problematic, because he now requires you not only to take it below 1/24th, but to clear it out completely. That's a chumrah gabi chumrah. The Gemara says, no, Rabbi Yossi makes you do that, because if we only allow you to take out a portion of it, you are implicitly or passively allowing the remainder to grow as kilayim, and that we don't want. We don't want you being, quote-unquote, mikayim kilayim, so therefore he demands that you clear it out completely. That means that there's no difference between the case of Kilayim and our Mishnah. 1/24th is the threshold. And when you're at that threshold, technically, you don't have to do anything. By Kilayim, we imposed upon you to do more because of the Chumrah of Kilayim. The way that we originally learned it, that 1/24th at Kilayim is equivalent to more than 1/24th by our Mishnah, then you would have a stira between that and Rav Huna's position. Because Rav Huna by our Mishnah demands you clear out the whole thing. And by Kilayim, we were saying, just Yimayit, just take it down a little bit. The Gemara rejected that view in favor of the latter view, which is that the din is the same, with an imposition of the Chachamim on Kilayim. Tashma, Shnayim Shifkidu Eitzel Echad. You have two individuals who deposited with a single Shomer. Zemane V'Zematayim. One of them gave him 100, the other one gave him 200. Zeomer Matayim Shali V'Zeomer Matayim Shali. When it comes to get their money back, both of them say we deposited 200. So you have 100 with the person, 200 with the person, and then they both come back claiming the 200. Note in the zemane, ula zemane. You gave 100 to each of them. The second 200, then you leave that until Yom Kippur comes to straighten it out. Each one of them is entitled to 100 for sure. We know for sure each one is entitled to 100. So to the two depositors, we each give them 100. The third 100, which they're arguing about who it belongs to, they're the person who took it in, as the Shomer has no idea who it belongs to. The Gemara in Bava Kamma explains it as a situation in which they deposited together. It wasn't clear to the Shomer which belonged to which person, and it was in a manner where he's not responsible to keep that differential alive. And because of that, he doesn't have to now figure out who the 100 belongs to or pay each party back, but simply put the 100 to Beit Din and say, you guys take care of it. This is out of my realm, and Achivalio, they'll figure out what it is. This is a question on the one who says that Rav Huna's din is Mishum Knas. And Mishum Knas, we penalize you in the Heter because of the Isur. So the question from this case in Bava Kamma is, over here you're allowing them to take back the Heter, which is the 100, and you're only penalizing them with regards to the Isur, which is the part that is in controversy about whether it belongs to which party. So there you see that they give them back the Heter piece, but they keep the Iser piece withheld. Why don't we say you penalize them of the Heter up to the Iser that's there? Meaning that that 100, which is in dispute, we should penalize them and not let give them back even the part that is not in dispute. The Gemara says, Achi Hashta, how can you compare the cases? There's an obvious difference in the cases, which is, Hotam Vaday Maneh Lamar Umaneh Lamar. Over there it's obvious that 100 belongs to one party, 100 belongs to the other party. Hacha miyemar delav kule aruve ariv. Who says over here that the guy didn't intentionally mix in the whole amount? You can't say necessarily that, oh yeah, you know what, up to 1/24th happened by itself, and then the guy added in the part above 1/24th. Who says that? Maybe he mixed in everything that was there from zero up to the amount that was there. You can't be certain as to how it all got there. If he already cheated and put in more, then how do you know whether he put in a whole amount, or he put in half the amount? It's not clear. By us, we know for sure that each Tardi gave in 100, and that belongs to them for sure. There's no uncertainty about those hundreds. The only uncertainty is about that last 100 that is in dispute. So that's the one that we penalize. But the other stuff, there's no reason to penalize. In our case, there is reason to penalize because it's very possible that he cheated through and through. Tashma Misefa. What about the latter half of that case in Baba Kama? And Rabbi Yossi. Imkain Ma'if Sidra Mai. What did the cheater lose out? The person who's lying over here has no downside to his claim. He comes in and says, the 200 is mine. His worst scenario is getting, he gets his 100 back, the amount of money that he deposited. His best scenario is they believe him and he gets 200 back. So he has no downside in making this claim. He has nothing to lose by lying over here. So Rabbi Yossi says, let's make it so that he, when he makes a claim like this, is really going to sustain a loss and think twice about doing this. We're going to put it all away until Eliyahu comes, and we're going to penalize the entire amount. Now, based on penalizing the entire amount, now when the Ramai comes in and says the 200 is mine, he has to think twice. When he says 200 is mine, he's not getting his 100 back. He's not even getting the 200, and he's not getting the 100 back. So now he's going to sustain a loss in order to make that claim. He would only make that claim if he really believed it, because otherwise he's going to lose his money here. So that's the intent of what Rabbi Yossi says. And this would be supportive of Rav Huna's position, according to one who says a knas. Here we do penalize the heter unto the isur. So too by us. Let's penalize the heter unto the isur. It says, afi ashta. Again, how can you compare the cases? Hotam vadayika ramai. Over there, there definitely is a cheater. Or the way that the Balei HaTosafot say it, you can say it the other way around, which is that over there it's clear that there is one person that is not a ramai. And you can see that explicitly in the Rabbeinu Gershom, because he says over here, Mishum hachi yadvin en l'kol chad maneh, t'chad minayu lav ramayhu. Over there, one of them is clearly telling the truth. Hacha, hai mocher mi'emar delokulu arvinu. Over here, who do you say that this guy is honest? He could be dishonest. So the Rabbeinu Gershom's Girsa in the Gemara follows what the Tosfot says could be the possible explanation in the Gemara. I mean that you can formulate it in either way. In the case in Baba Kama, there is one person who is a cheater and one person who's clearly not a cheater. Hacha mi'emar daruve arid. Over here, how are you certain that he cheated over here? It's possible that all of it got in there by natural means. All of it was done by passive inclusion, and he was not actively adding it in there. So there's no definitive proof that this guy is a thief or a ramai over here. So yeah, according to Rabbi Yossi over there, we know there's a thief in there, or we know that there's somebody's telling the truth, so we're trying to get to an answer. So in that case, we're going to penalize everybody to get to the right outcome. Over here, why should you penalize him? We have no idea if he did something wrong. We're just suspecting he did something wrong because it's above the normal threshold, but that is not enough of a reason to say that we should penalize him because we don't know for certain that there is a cheater or a thief over here. Or we don't know for sure that there's a truth teller over here that we need to protect. So therefore, there's no reason for the knas in our case, and therefore it won't be a proof to Rav Huna. Tashma, shtar sheyesh bo ribit. You have a contract that has interest in it, which is illegal. One is not allowed to charge interest to a fellow Jew. It is illegal on all parties. The creditor, the debtor, and the edim in the shtar are all out of line over here and are all chayav in violation of Lavin. We discussed above Mitzia how many Lavin there are over and what the problems are. But it's clear that all of them are in the wrong. Konsinoto venu gove loete kerem veloete ribit divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, you know how we can dissuade people from charging interest? That is, if they put interest-bearing loans into a contract, we are going to penalize them that not only can they not collect the interest, they won't get the principal back. So now, even though the beneficiary of this penalty is the loveh, is the borrower now, because now he doesn't have to pay back the money, nevertheless, it's in our vested interest to penalize the malveh. Now, the truth is, we should be penalizing the loveh as well, because the loveh also did something wrong in terms of the lav. But the truth is that if you penalize the loveh, you're not really penalizing him. He signed a contract that said, I'm going to repay the principal amount with interest. So now, how are you going to penalize the loveh? You're going to say to him, he has to pay the principal and the interest? That's what he agreed to do anyway. It can't be a penalty. The only way you can create a penalty is on the malveh, and therefore we're going to go after him. I would even formulate it in a different way, which is, the person you need to dissuade is the malveh. The loveh is desperate, so he's going to borrow at whatever rate or whatever way he can. So he's going to borrow with interest. The malveh is the problem over here because he's facilitating these loans with interest. So therefore we're going to penalize him. So the knas is on the malveh, and Rabbi Meir says, the kenas is that if you start to charge interest, you're going to lose your right, not only to collect the interest, you're going to lose your right to collect the principal. Now, the Balei HaTosafot over here, Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, in all those places, the Ri says that when we see over here that you can't collect, that means you can't collect, period. You lose your right of collection through and through. So the penalty is, not only can you not collect the interest, you can't collect the principal, period. Because you have a shtar that is invalid. Once the shtar is invalid, what proof do you have? The fact that the loan was outstanding. Other Rishonim disagree and suggest that, yes, with regards to a shtar, you have no right of collection. But you still have a right of collection, ba'al peh. So all that happens over here, the penalty is you may not collect the interest. As far as the principal amount, it turns into a milveh al peh instead of being a milveh b'shtar. The difference being whether you can collect from collateral. Can you go after collateral and can you go after encumbered properties? So we penalize him. Not that he loses the entire principal, but he just loses his right to collect it as a milveh b'shtar, but he can collect it as a milveh al peh. So that's a fundamental machloket as to how far this penalty of Rabbi Meir goes. So then the Gemara says, Achi Ashta, how can you compare this case of interest-bearing loans to our case over here? Interest-bearing loans, where we're penalizing him on the heter up to the Itzur. Over here, in our case, you should also penalize the heter up to the Itzur. Hata mishat ktiva David le suma. At the point of ktiva, he already violated the Isra of loti simun alav neshech, that you may not charge interest. The failure is not just in the transaction where when he goes to pay interest, he is violating the din. He violates the din from the moment they enter into the transaction, from the time they write the contract. So then the contract is completely invalid. Since it's completely invalid, then there's a reason to penalize him from that moment on the entire contract amount, because the contract itself was problematic. The whole transaction was problematic. Over here, we don't know for certain that he did it. Given the level, we suspect that he did it. So then, maybe there's a reason to penalize him for the amount above 1/24th. But to say then, the Easter plus the Heter we're going to penalize, over here, we're not certain that he did something wrong. And if we're not certain he did something wrong, then there's no reason to penalize him the Heter after the Easter. Over there, we're certain he did something wrong because he signed a contract that was an invalid contract that violated the Easter of Rebeat from the moment that he signed the contract. So over there, where we're certain he did something wrong and he's engaged in something that's problematic, there will be gozer heter atu isur. Over here, we won't do that. So Mar says, tashma miseifa. What about the latter half of that position, where the chachamim argue on Rabbi Meir? Chachamim omrim, govet to kerimen and govet to ribit. The chachamim say you're allowed to collect the principal amount. You're not allowed to collect the interest. So you see there just the opposite. That we don't penalize you in the heter atu isur, and same thing by us. The Balei HaTosafot ask over here, how do, according to the Chachamim, you have a valid contract? Over here you have a Malveh and a Loveh who clearly sinned, and you have Edim who sinned by putting the interest together. So now your Edim are invalid, and the entire contract is invalid. How do the Chachamim say here you're collecting the principal amount if the contract is completely invalid from the start? So he says, V'yesh lomar, galoti simon le'inche b'malveh v'loveh v'arev mashmalu. People in general think that the Isra of Loti Simon only applies to the creditor, debtor, and the guarantor. V'lo le'edim, but not to the witnesses. V'lachi lo mifsele, because they didn't believe they were doing something wrong. Since they didn't believe they were doing something wrong, we're not going to consider them to be Risha'im, who are invalid in Eidut, because they don't even think they're doing something wrong. If they thought they were doing something or knew they were doing something wrong, we could say that the contract's invalid because they're invalid Eidim. But over here, you can't claim that they're invalid Edim because of Rasha, because they stole money, or they're willing to steal money, or they're willing to lie about things. They thought whatever they did was fine. They had no idea that there was any Isser involved in what they did. That's one possibility. Or, Inami, Kigon Sheish Edim Sheyu Nusim Achmat Nefashot. They were threatened to sign it, and the Edim signed on the contract under duress. So they are Kasher Edim, because the Edim themselves were forced to sign on there, and they did not implicate themselves as Rishayim by signing on such a contract. They're not in violation of the Isur of Rebit. So that's how Tosafot gets the contract to be valid. Now, obviously, you could also give the answer, like we said before with the Balei HaTosafot, that yeah, in Ochanami, there is no shtar here, and what the Chachamim mean that you collect over here means they collect b'toret milveh peh. But if that's the case, then you have to believe by Rabbi Meir when he says that you can't collect the Karen, it means you can't collect it at all. The Chachamim over here say that you can collect it as a milveh al peh. The Gemara answers again here, Ochiashta. How can you compare the cases? Hatam vaday karna deterohu. Over there, you know for certain that the principal amount was heter. He lent them the money, and that was completely valid. The interest was the invalid part of it. So if you bifurcate the contract, it's a clear portion of the contract, which is the principal amount is heter, and the rebate is isur. So now the question is, are you kones? The heter atu the isur. Rabbi Meir says yes, the chamim say no. But ba'ayr case over here, ha'chami yemer dekule lo aruve ariv. How do you know over here that there's really a differentiation between heter and isur? Who says that only above 1/24th he added in? That which is below 1/24th was heter. It could be that he added in the whole amount. You have no idea. It could be that it's complete isur over here. And therefore, by us, there's more reason to be gozer the heter atu the isur. So Gemara again says you can't prove it in either direction from over here. But the Bali Tosafot note over here, like they do in other places, that despite the fact that we have a principle that Allah ka Rabbi Meir b'gzeirut tav, that even Rabbi Meir is a dat yachid, and he's arguing on the Chachamim, the Allah is like him b'gzeirut tav. When he puts a gzeira together, they say over here, that's not the case. Even though this looks like a quote-unquote gzeira, it is not a gzeira, but rather a takana. And since it is a takana, the Bali Tosafot say that the Allah is going to be Meir b'gzeirut tav, but not b'takanut tav. It's true when he puts a gzeira in place, but when he puts a takana, an institution in place, and that takana is not subject to the rule of halachic Rabbi Meir b'gzeirutav, and therefore the halach is like the chachamim over here. Right, so tashma. So now we try another proof. Tetani Ravin Barav Nachman. Lo eta mutar bilvadu machzir. Not only does the excess amount he return, ela machzir lo kol harivain kulan. He has to return him all of the rovakavs, all of the 1/24ths in their entirety. Alma, hecha debaya dure kula mahader. You see from here that when you have to return something, you have to return the entire amount. So now the case over here is, if you have a property that you're going to sell, it's something that's coming up in our mesechta, when you're selling a beit kur, where he says, beit kur afar ani mocher lecha mida bechevel. I'm selling you a beit kur afar. And then, bita bechevel means measured out by the string. An exact beit kur afar, that's what I'm selling to you. That the Mishnah over there says is, if he says also the language of hein chaser, hein yater, whether it's a little below or a little above, then he is mochel on that excess amount. He's mochel on at least 1/24th skew in the measurement, and that's considered to be acceptable skew from the measurement that he gives. Because he used the lashon of ein chaser v'ein yater. The Mishnah over there says, then even if he reduces it by rova kav l'sa'a, or a sif rova kav l'sa'a, higio. Meaning that the skew in error for the measurement is 1/24th. So if he sells him a beit kur afar, what is considered to be a normal error or normal skew? The answer is 1/24th. So that's what it says over here. If he sold him that amount, and it's within the range of being more than the amount he said by 1/24th, or less than 1/24th, the sale goes through. What the Mishnah says is, then, if it finds that one of the fields has more than 1/24th, the excess is more than 1/24th, he has to return it. But not only does he have to return the 1/24th there, he's got to return all of the 1/24ths along the way. I mean that he gets 1/24th per sa'ah of skew. That means that if he sells him a kur, a kur is made up of 30 sa'ah. That means that he gets 30 1/24ths for every sa'ah. I mean, each sa'ah, he gets a 1/24th. So now he sold them a whole kur. So now you can take 1/24th of the whole kur. What we say is if one of those sublots of sa'ah has more than 1/24th skew or problem with its measurements, then he's got to refund him, or he's got to make sure that everything is exact, and now he's got to give back the 1/24th for everything. So this sounds exactly like Rav Huna, which is that when we penalize you or force you to refund the excess, not only do you refund the excess, you refund the entire amount. And the way that the Rashbam reads it over here, umisayi le Rav Huna, this is helpful to Rav Huna, valishna kamar darmila dina kamisaya. According to one who says that it's a dina, it helps. The halach v'atam chataymahu. Because over here and there is the same din, which is ruba machil. People are mochel on that type of differential. Up to 1/24th, people are mochel. And that's exactly what we're saying here, is up to 1/24th, they're mochel. Beyond that, they are not mochel. And therefore, you got to refund the whole thing. And same thing by us. Up to 124, they are willing to accept other produce or dirt, stones, and items in it. Beyond the 124, they're not willing to accept it. They're not mochel on it. So that's, and Bali Tosfot say the same thing, that the Lishna Dina Maite, according to that Lishon, this is very supportive of that position. The Gemara says, Hachi Ashta, how do you compare the cases? Hotam hein chaser hein yoter amale. So that extraneous language is what causes us to make that decision over there. Over there, it's only the additional language which allows him that ability to skew off of the exact measurement because he specified it. But that means underlying that, people in general are not mochel on karka, or people in general expect to get whatever they bought. If you said a beit kor, they expect to get a beit kor. It's only because of that additional language that we give you a little room of skew up to 124th. But that means underlying it, it is an exact measurement and people are not mochel. Therefore, when you exceed the amount, we're going to say pay it all back. Because the person expected to get what he wanted. He didn't expect to get anything besides that. And the hein chaser and yeter gives you a little protection, but other than that, he expects to get the exact amount. In our case over here, by the tarovet that's in there, that's what people would expect. It's normally going to be in there. People expect it, and they are mochel on it. And it doesn't require any extra language to be mochel on it. It doesn't require any disclosure or any additional language because people are mochel, irrespective of the language, because that's what they expect to be in there. When people buy a field, they expect to get the exact measurement. When they get produce, they expect to get stuff mixed in there. And that will cause the difference. So over there, you have to refund everything because they expect the exact measurement. Maybe in our case, you don't have to refund everything because people expect that to be there. Now the Rishbam is somewhat perplexed by the conclusion of the Gemara over here, because if you go to the Mishnah on Kuf Dalet, the Gemara there concludes that you don't have to say hein chaser v'hein yeter, and that if you say stam, beit kur afar ani mocher lecha, subsumed in that is the hein yeter v'hein chaser. And that would mean that the cases are identical then. There we use a generic language. We assume that you are mochel on up to 124th. And in our case over here, we're saying the same thing. Up to 124th, we assume that you are mochel. So then actually, the Gemara will have a good proof from there, because the distinction that our Gemara is making is not kept in the conclusion of the Gemara on Kuf Dalet. And you don't need the extraneous language. So the Rashbam tries to explain it even according to that language. And he says, yes, Eino Hanami, when you say Beit Kura Farani Mocher Lecha, then up to 124th there is an implicit mechila involved. But once you go on beyond 124th, we say there's no longer a mechila, and then we make you return it to the exact amount. Because in general, when people sell based on a Beit Kur Afar, they expect to get a Beit Kur Afar. They don't expect a skew or a difference in the measurement. Given that, the mechila, yes, is there because people are generally are mochel, but once you exceed the amount, we're going to force you to return it to the exact amount because that's what people expect. In our case over here, by the Afrurit or the other produce that's mixed in, people expect. It's vadai. It's definitely in there. Since they expect it and it's vadai in there, then maybe the din would be different. That you just have to get it below the threshold. You don't have to get it all the way down to zero. And therefore, it's not a proof to Ravuna. And the Balei Tosafot say something similar, which is that when you say Beit Kur Afar, people expect it to be a Beit Kur Afar. When you say a Sa'ap Peirot, they expect it to be a Sa'ap Peirot that is comprised of both Peirot and some tinofet that is in there up to 124th. And that they do expect. And therefore, when you exceed that level, maybe you just have to get it down to the level that people expect. By the karka, where people expect to get really a Beit Kur Afar, because that's what's called a Beit Kur Afar, not something that's skewed off. Even though there's mechila, there still is not called a Beit Kur Afar. And therefore, once we figure out that it's above 124th, we're going to force you to get it to what really is the definition of a Beit Kur Afar. And that'll be the difference in the cases. Miu revia lo choshiv, but when he says that and he's mochel, that's only up to a revia, up to 124th. Yetem revia, if it's above 124th, choshiv, then it is considered to be significant. The kevent avilel it's terufe metisha kabin, since now if you aggregate all the excesses, it'll come out to close to 9 kav. Havle ara choshivuta, that is land that has significance in of itself, apinaf shavadra, and therefore you have to return the whole thing. So if you look on the Rabbeinu Gershom on the bottom of the previous Amud, if you take a kor, which is 30 sa'ah, And for every sa'a, we said that you can have a quarter calf. That means that it's 1/24 of the sa'a. If you take 30 sa'a at a rova calf, that's 30 times 1/4, or 7.5 calf. Which means in a total area of Beit Kor, you can have up to 7.5 calf of skew, and still would be within this 1/24 amount per sa'a. But if you exceed that by a small amount, then on an aggregated basis, it will no longer be 7.5 kav for the total area, but it will get up to 9 kav for the whole area. Meaning that if you add in 1.5 more kav over 30 sa'a, and instead of taking a quarter kav per sa'a, you took 3/10 of a kav per sa'a, then 30 times 3/10 of a kav per sa'a turns out to be 90 over 10 or 9 kav. So if you move small amount from a quarter kav to 3/10 of a kav from 0.25 to 0.3, already then you have a significant amount. And that's why there's a difference between being at a quarter kav and being above a quarter kav. Again, it's not an exact measurement. What the Gemara is pointing out is that if you aggregate that amount over a kor, then once you cross over that threshold of 1/4 a kav, you start to move into the area where you're going to have a significant plot of land that is already being forgiven, quote unquote, in the sale, and that's unacceptable, and that's why there's no mechila over there. All right, we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph.